check.
Good.
That sound okay?
Yeah.
I guess let's get this show on the road, hey? Okay. So you are Gilbert Baker and Abbe Sundara, and you guys together are sort of one room, a lot of importantness into very delicious-looking people. Do you want to introduce yourselves to the listeners out there in La La Land?
Yeah, my name's Gilbert Baker.
And you designed...
The rainbow flag.
The rainbow flag. The rainbow flag. It's on everything. It's on... do you see any money? When somebody makes, like, a rainbow necklace or something...
No.
No?
No, it's in the public domain. The rainbow flag belongs to everybody. And
that's really nice of you.
Yeah, well, you know, I there was a little bit of a sacrifice, but not really, because that's the success of it, is that it does belong to everyone.
Which is pretty cool.
It is.
Which is pretty fantastic. And you started...
Equal Ground. Hi. Saran Abbe Sundara, from Sri Lanka. And I helped set up Equal Ground about 5 years ago as a human rights organization of working with the LGBT community in Sri Lanka.
So the upside of this is that now in Sri Lanka there is a...
A pride.
Yes, there's a pride, which is really fascinating because apparently it's sort of one of the most homophobic oppressed places in the world.
We have a penalty of 10 years imprisonment if you are caught or suspected of being queer in Sri Lanka. So, yeah, it is a little bit of a struggle, but...
I just think it's amazing that you're able to put together a party.
Yeah, it's not legal, nor is it easy. And at the end of each day, we kind of like all huddle together, all the trustees of Equal Ground, and say, "Oh, thank God, one more day without being arrested." But it's it is. But the satisfaction that you feel after an event is just amazing, because you were able to get all these people who do not have a place to go and hang out. We do not have bars and restaurants which are gay bars and restaurants or nightclubs or whatever. So we're creating these safe spaces for the queer community to come together and just be themselves, even if it is only for a couple of days every year. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is really pretty amazing. Now, what's it like living in Sri Lanka? Is there, with the advent of the internet, is there a large connection to the outside world, particularly?
There is. In the last few years, especially in the last 2 years, we've seen this, this growth in of people's awareness of what's happening around the world, because it's a small little island, and the average person in Sri Lanka, it cannot afford to even travel to our nearest country, because you have to either take a plane or you have to take a plane to get to the nearest place. So we are very insular, it's just there's very little outside information that that an average person can actually get hold of. But in the last 2 years with the internet, people's perceptions of what's happening around the world is that much more.
Now, on the average, how easy is it for someone, say you're, a gay teen and you're from kind of a poor family, are there internet cafes?
There are internet cafes in the big cities, but outside of that, which is most of the country, there aren't. And it is very difficult. And in Sri Lanka do not have a social welfare system or homes for the aged, really, until very recently.
Really?
And we people get married not because they love someone or they fall madly in love with this person or whatever. They get married purely out of necessity, because the minute you get married, you have a roof over your head,
right.
And then you have children, and then your children take care of you when you're old. So it is our social security is this whole idea of marriage. And because of that, it is very, our family units are very strong. People's, inter-family connections are very strong. And people are forced into marriage. So you have all these gay people, queer people, who are forced into these marriages, which they find so difficult, being part of.
And that probably creates a pretty large community of people having sex on the down low.
Absolutely.
Is a lot of the queer interaction based around cruising?
Very much so. Very much so.
And what does that do for the situation with HIV and other sexually transmitted infections?
Our government tries to hide things under the carpet. And,
really?
And, you know, without actually looking at... they keep saying that our, you know, HIV and AIDS numbers are very low, but we really don't have a clue.
So there really is no data.
Hardly any. There's, they keep telling people that it's 1,200 people that are infected with HIV in Sri Lanka. So, I mean, that in itself is will tell you how you know how completely.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Statistics.
How many people live in Sri Lanka?
19 million people.
Yeah. So, if you have like a large community of men who are having sex on the down low, I mean, there's, you know, I gotta say, it seems like a little bit unlikely that they would have, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence handing out free condoms on the street. I mean, what is the sex education like?
We have none. No. And also, it is one of the few countries in the world where it is actually illegal to carry a condom.
Condoms are illegal.
Yeah, to carry one. You can have one in your house or whatever, but you can't. You can actually be arrested for carrying a condom. So there you go.
Amazing. Wow, yeah.
It's bizarre. It really is bizarre.
It's shocking. I didn't know that.
It's shocking.
Okay. Wow. So that's sort of a big downer. Let's just talk about like in your personal experience.
Yeah.
What are the other queer men you know like? How did you meet them?
Well,
how do you interact?
Very simply, when we set up Equal Ground, there was a very strong need in Sri Lanka for to bring the community together because we knew we had loads of friends and people that were, you know, but we had no place to go and be out, you know, like in a bar or a restaurant or whatever, and we had very few things that we. That we were had the privilege of being, you know, exposed to like queer movies or queer themed movies or whatever. So with Equal Ground, what we did was we started having movie nights, you know, where you know someone would send us like from the States or from somewhere a DVD and you know a gay themed DVD, or you know we pick one up on our travels and we come back and once a month we have our queer movie nights. So you know they would come and they would sit and go, wow, this is too cool, you know, and anyway, and that led on to having queer themed parties and stuff. And I remember the first party we had, and we just had about 6 people there because everyone was just too scared. Even though we had lots of friends who were gay, they were just too scared to come out and you know to be part of this this thing. And now it's just steadily grown. Once they realize that there's these places where they can come to and be themselves and dress the way they want to and you know hold hands with somebody. You know, it's just really. It's a very powerful thing, and there are lots of things people take for granted. I mean, I remember my partner and I, the first time that we traveled outside Sri Lanka to Europe for the first time together, and the first time we actually held hands on a street, and we were like, oh my God, and both of us there bawling our eyes out thinking, oh my God, this is too weird, you know, we're holding hands in public, you know, on the street and walking down the street, and it's cool, you know. So there are lots of small things that people take for granted, and where in Sri Lanka and in lots of other countries in the world where you can't take those for granted, and that's and it's important for people to be aware of that, you know, and say and think of how lucky you guys are here in Canada, you know, for laws and liberties and benefits and the rights that you'll have as human beings.
So. Yeah, Canada. You know, sometimes I have to say I do take Canada and even the States for granted. I guess now I'm sort of used to the. I don't know if you know, but like in California, my home state. It's now, gay marriage is now legal, which is pretty awesome. But it's just amazing to not even to just think of some place where it's so, so strict. I guess, you know, I guess just sort of the generation that I come from and, you know, sort of a lot of my peer group comes from, there's, it would be very hard for us to imagine not seeing gay people on TV, not being able to, you know, basically make out in public.
And I think you know, a lot of the what we have achieved as queer people throughout the world. And a lot of thanks goes to Gilbert because, you know, we were able to give them a sign or a symbol, you know, these people in Sri Lanka, that they can relate to, or they can say, oh, that's us, you know, and they look at the flag and say, that's us. And we, and it was this whole education. I have a DVD which I bought on one of my travels of the flag of going from Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean, you know, the in
Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
I haven't done the actual Pacific to Atlantic.
Key West.
Key West, yeah.
Yeah.
Sea to sea.
It was, and so we showed them this documentary, and we had this you know, a talk about what the flag was all about and how it came about and what Stonewall is all about, and you know, so many people didn't know, and it's so important, and you know, that flag has now united all of us and say, okay, that's what we're fighting with, you know, that's our banner, that's our you know, our flag, and you know, we are all standing united under that flag, so it's very important. So thank you, Gilbert.
So I guess let's see, one more thing I want to touch on with you. How do you keep going? It's I'm sure it's very, very depressing sort of to go back home to Sri Lanka and then you can't hold hands with your boyfriend. What keeps you going? How do you
that's
feel
exactly what keeps us going. You know, the fact that I don't feel sad when I'm in Sri Lanka, not at all. I feel energized because, you know, as human beings, and human beings that are privileged not to be educated, privileged to be alive, privileged to have these experiences of being able to travel around the world, you know, we have responsibilities too, and our responsibility is to make sure that those who don't have those same privileges eventually get them. And you know, and it's very empowering, and when you go and work in countries such as Sri Lanka, and you're trying to you know, get the laws changed and get homosexuality decriminalized, get homophobia you know, and the whole message that, you know, we are human beings and why should we be treated any differently to anyone else? We, you know, we breathe the same way as you, we, you know, laugh the same way as you. You know, we are people. And it is scary, yes. And every day, you know, we have to lock our doors, and you know, we have grills on our office windows and stuff. And there's a camera just watches at the entrance of our office. Yeah, we have to be careful and so on and so forth. But the knowing that that we are working towards making a difference for these people, and there are thousands of people out there that need, you know. Need the work that we're doing, so you know, it just keeps us going.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming in. It's been fantastic to hear your story and extremely inspirational. That kind of makes me feel a little bit guilty for sort of sitting on my butt all day. All right, well, stick with us, and we will be right back with the man who invented the rainbow flag. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
We'll do it live! If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
We are on CITR 101.9 FM with... Now you
Oh, I'm supposed to say something?
I'm just listening
to your voice, because I think you're so good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's great. It's nice to be here.
Okay, let's just...
Stop.
Let's,
take two.
Take two? Okay, take two. I'm sorry. It's been a long weekend.
No problem.
Pemberton in the mud.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. We're on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, with the delicious, delightful, delectable, and extremely sexy...
Gilbert Baker.
And Gilbert Baker invented...
The rainbow flag.
So, wow, it's fantastic to have you here with us today.
Thanks.
Because you made something that was on, like, every little tiny cheap piece of tacky jewelry I had starting around age 14.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you? Do you mind me asking?
I'm 21 years old.
Oh, my God. The flag is even older than you. I'm so scared now. yeah, 30 years.
I can remember being 14, 15 years old, going into the Castro for the first time in San Francisco, you know, getting out of the metro, walking up, and... like blotting out the sun, this huge rainbow flag. It was huge. I just remember it being like 100 feet across. I'm sure it's not quite that big, but
it's pretty big.
All of a sudden, I thought, you know, I'm home, and that's a very powerful feeling. And a lot of people, millions of people worldwide, that feeling of community and home is associated with something you made. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. It feels great. I mean, you know. I do have a saying about flags, that a true flag can't be designed. It's torn from the soul of the people. And that's really what I always think about the rainbow flag, is how, you know, in spite of my great, you know, skill as a seam master and the years of work I've put into it, it really is about the people out there that love it and embrace it and own it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic piece of art. But a lot of people don't know this. Each of the colors means something.
Yeah, I mean, the point of the rainbow in total was we wanted to have a symbol that was kind of the answer to the pink triangle. The pink triangle really had functioned as our symbol for the movement, especially after World War II, obviously. It was put on us by the Nazis, and we needed something that came from ourselves. And the rainbow really fit our diversity, it fit our beauty, and it's sexy. And so as I began to think about, you know, what a symbol would be, I began to look at flags in particular as very potent political visibility. And I thought we should have a flag because we are a people, we're a nation, if you will, or an international or global tribe even. And that really sort of got me thinking about making a flag. What would it be? And the rainbow was really very logical. And then, of course, flags, you know, all have, you know, are imbued with meanings and symbolism. So, you know, sort of collaging it from our, you know, acid trips in the 60s and all kinds of New Age philosophy in the 70s, we came up, you know, with the meanings for the colors. In the beginning, it had 8 colors. It had pink for sex, red for life, orange for healing, yellow for the sun, green for nature, turquoise for magic and art, and blue for serenity, and purple for the spirit. And I liked the 8 colors because there are, in fact, 8 sexes in our genes. There are 8 chromosome pairings in every single cell of every single human being. There are 8 possibilities. So I like that. And of course, there's some Chinese luck numbers there. Yeah. But quickly, right
Not
after
pink it, fabric.
And I ran out of pink fabric. I literally exhausted the entire supply of pink nylon in the U.S. almost immediately. And then I would go to flag manufacturers and they'd say, no flag has pink. What are you thinking? And so I quickly had to compromise to the 6 colors to be able to really, you know, make it mass produced.
But the 7th color, like the turquoise, there was an issue with that because you were hanging them up, I think, on Market Street. And the poles got in the way and hid the color, right?
No, it was really more about the poles. The Market Street thing, I think, was 79 when I first did the big street displays. No, it was really about making the colors balance between the hot and the cold colors. So once I had to lose pink, then I decided to pull out turquoise and really keep it the primary and secondary colors, which, of course, everyone knows today.
Yeah, okay.
But it isn't really about the number of colors.
We have
to get
Wikipedia.
That out. It's Wikipedia, a little rainbow flag 101, a little gay rights 101. But it isn't really about that. It's about the rainbow, and it's about that beautiful piece of nature and that we have claimed it. And I think that's part of the reason it's such a potent symbol, is that we're part of nature, just like the rainbow and everything else. So it really works for us.
It definitely does. Wow, I bet that actually works really well as a pickup line, because it's very romantic, you know, if you think about it. It's wonderful.
I'll have to try that out.
what was San Francisco like in the 70s?
It was wild. It was great.
It was wild.
Sure.
So this is right around the time of sort of the post-Stonewall, pre-AIDS.
Yeah. Post-Stonewall, pre-AIDS, exactly.
That must have been crazy.
It was. Well, crazy and very liberated, and it was a time of liberation. Actually, after Stonewall, really the first emerging groups were the gay liberation Liberation Front, and then it became the beginnings of the gay pride, or in the beginning it wasn't gay pride, it was the Gay Freedom Day Parade, and then ultimately it was the Lesbian and Gay Freedom Day Parade, and then, you know, began the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and then finally transgender. And so we've kind of added to it as we went along to, you know, invent our movement in a broader and more inclusive manner. And then I think the first time I heard of GRID was in 80, 81 in there. And a friend of mine was a nurse, Bobby Campbell, and came to me and said, I want to show you something. And he took off his shoes and socks, and he showed me this little purple spot on his ankle. And he said, this is Kaposi's sarcoma. And I said, what in the hell is that? And he said, no, this is really important. We need to do something about this because I'm not the only one that has this. And so very quickly I realized, oh, my God, there really is something unknown, something really serious happening to our community. And Bobby was a sister of Perpetual Indulgence. She mentioned them earlier. And they really were one of the great pioneering groups to really start educating people. I remember working them with them, we made a little pamphlet called Play Fair about how to have, quote, safe sex. We didn't have a name for it then, but how to, you know, not get sexually transmitted diseases. And we couldn't get it published anywhere. Really? Yeah, we would get thrown out of gay bars saying, don't bring that in here. And then, you know, within short order, really within just a matter of months, all of a sudden a lot of my friends were getting sick. And then it became AIDS, you know, it finally had a thing, and it was the gay disease. Reagan never mentioned the word, and, you know, people flocked to San Francisco when they found out they had it because, you know, they were thrown out of their homes or out of their families, and there was no care available, and no one knew what to do. And, you know, regrettably, by 1985, I watched literally half of my friends die, and it was a horrible, horrible death. And, you know, we had to take care of each other, and it really profoundly changed me and many people because, you know, I thought I wouldn't be dealing with death until I was an old person. But for my generation and for particularly lesbians who really jumped in to be our caregivers, I mean, so many people were sick. And if it really hadn't been for women in particular and lesbians who we really forged a great unity of movement then in the 80s. Really, it was kind of separate before that, you know, gay men on one side, women on the other. But AIDS really did bring us together in a way that really saved a lot of lives and certainly comforted a lot of people.
Do you have hope for the future?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
How do you feel about this, the upcoming generation? The upcoming legendary children.
Yes, my great, great, great grandchildren. Well, I feel good. I think that there's a lot of conventional wisdom about the youth of today. And, you know, I do interviews all over the world, and people are always saying, well, they don't care. And I'm like, well, that's not true. They do care. But it's different. But it's the same. And the thing that bonds us across the time is that we all go through this same experience. I mean, it's about knowing who you are. And, you know, when you come out to yourself, it's hard. You know, it was just as hard for me to come out to my family as it is for some 16-year-old or 17-year-old today. It's really a tough thing, and that's what bonds us. And that moment that when you finally know who you are, accept who you are, and live in the truth and the light, that's the incredible thing about our movement, is that it crosses generations before me and I'm sure will after. And that's the great, great power. It's not about the fabric. It's not even really about the design. A flag is an action. Yeah. It's a direct visibility action. And, you know, when you put a flag up on your house or you wear it on a T-shirt.
It says we're family.
Well, and more than that, it says this is who I am. It's, you're saying something about who you are. And I think that's incredible. And you know, back to the youth of today, I really hate that because I feel like young, you know, that's one of the first things people do. You come out of the closet and you want to share that. In fact, you know, it's important to know that there's a responsibility that comes with your freedom. And part of that is being a part of a community and working with other people to, you know, pave the way for those that are going to follow in our footsteps. So, you know, it's you know, once as as you know, once you're in the light, there's no turning back, you know, just keep going.
So let's talk about an issue that happened in Vancouver recently, and I gather it happens sometimes in other communities. As you know, Davie Village is sort of the heart of the
I'm ready. Gay let's community. Rumble. Oh, yeah. And they're taking down the rainbow flags.
That's what I was getting at, yeah. What does that symbolize? How do you feel about that?
Oh, it makes me angry. Yeah. It kind of pisses me off. First of all, I think it's either colossally stupid or it's deliberately homophobic. And I think that they made a complete PR blunder with that. And, you know, I had occasion to meet the director or whatever her title is of that. And, you know, she was trying to snow me with, well, we're going to put up some new banners. And, you know, they're like the rainbow, but they aren't the rainbow flag. And the rainbow flag means something. So, I mean, it's not an advertisement. And so I think it was a huge blunder. You know, the other day I said, you know, I could put some red finger paint on a white sheet, but it doesn't make it a Canadian flag. And, you know, I think that they owe us an apology. And I think that they need to, you know, get off of it. And if they don't, I think they're gonna find out really quickly what gay power really is, and that's our pocketbooks.
I guess a lot of my friends sort of view it as kind of having to, like, you know, take down the rainbow stuff, take down everything, you know, when your aunt or whatever comes to town. And it's kind of like going back into the closet.
Yeah, it's about being invisible. But the whole point of the rainbow flag is about visibility, and I think that that's what it is. It is, in fact, homophobia. And that straight people don't want us to be too gay. And that, you know, there's a boundary that they want to set for us, but it's not up to them.
What do you think the relationship should be between the straight community and the gay community? If they're starting
they
to
owe us.
Want... If they're sort of
they owe
starting
us.
To want to come into the clubs.
Yeah, well, they owe us.
Right.
Big time. They dress like us. They listen to our music. They think like us. They use our language. We have paved the way over and over for generations with our art, with our creativity, and with our intellectual thoughts. So they owe us. And, you know, I think that there's a stripe in the rainbow for straight people. I think that their sexual liberation... is important for everyone, including straight people. I know many straight people who are very supportive of us. And I think that it's important that we don't forget our straight brothers and sisters as we, you know, take power. But that's not to say that we're going to, you know, put up with, you know, crap, that we're going to put up with their violence, that we're going to put up with their prejudices. You know, Martin Luther King said, the most dangerous thing in the world is sincere ignorance or conscientious stupidity. And really, those are the towers of prejudice that we still face today. So, you know, we still have a long way to go. We've gone a long way. I mean, we were talking about California at marriage, and that's on the ballot. And
they're going to try and put it in the...
No, it's in the Constitution to discriminate. Right, and it's a very big possibility that could, in fact, happen. And, in fact, it has happened in almost 45 states where we are, you know, written into the Constitution to be discriminated against. So we still have a long ways to go. But we're never going to give up. You know, that's not going to happen. But it is kind of, you know, we're talking about gay pride this week and everything. And I think it's important for people to get out and dance and have fun and celebrate. But to remember that we're celebrating a struggle. Right. And that struggle is really today at its moment of truth. It's, you know, equality, yes or no. And I think people need to remember that. I think they need to celebrate, you know, how far we've come, to celebrate the fight that's still in us. You know, Dwight Eisenhower, the president of the U.S., said, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, but it's the size of the fight in the dog. And, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, run, Toto, run down to California. Let's stop that Wicked Witch and that horrible amendment. And I think, you know, people are becoming more globally aware. I mean, we're talking about the younger generation, if you will. And I'm so impressed by how smart they are, far beyond anything. You know, in my generation, everyone's so cyber-connected, everyone's so technical, and so informed and so educated in such a broad way. And I'm hoping, you know, in the future that all of that, you know, information, education, and genius will really, you know, do some good in the world. You know, places like Sri Lanka, we were talking about the, what, 7-8 countries where you can still be killed, as 81 countries or something where you can, you know, be thrown in jail. And so, yeah, we have it good and, you know, we're smart and fabulous and beautiful. But with our freedom comes the responsibility to make sure that we're, you know, opening that door for everyone else.
So, Saran, any last thoughts on freedom yourself?
As Gilbert was saying, we do have a responsibility. There are 81 countries in the world currently that still criminalize homosexuality, and in 7, the penalty is death. So while we are celebrating here in Vancouver Pride, it is still a protest. It is right. Still a rallying cry, and it is still, queer people in Vancouver getting together and saying, we are not going to take, the fact that these countries still discriminate against our own brothers and sisters, and we are fighting for their rights. And I think that is very important. And I think what the Vancouver Pride Society is doing in making people aware of these horrendous atrocities that happen around the world is a very, very important.
Yeah, you have to show up for yourself. That's the whole thing about Pride. You have to show up for yourself.
Stand up for and be counted.
Yeah, I mean, don't let them take down the rainbow flags and show up for yourself. And you know, go online and get involved in the global gay community. There's plenty of ways you can support places like Saran's talking about. We're talking about International Gay and Lesbian ILGA, the association. So there are many ways for people out there to get involved and actually do something. And that's the important thing about Pride, and the whole moment of it is, you know, seize it, do something, get involved. It's an action, you know. This isn't just a passive thing, you know. This isn't a game. This is life. Life and death.
First, basically, tell people to vote for something or send money somewhere, and then just tell them how to find you on the internet.
Equal Ground, www.equal-ground.org.
And what would you like people to do?
Go and have a look. Make yourself aware of what is happening around the world. The other website is www.ilga.org. Be aware of what is happening around you. When you are marching down the streets here in Vancouver, march for a country that is still criminalizing homosexuality. You know, you guys are just not marching for yourselves, but you're marching for all those people, millions of people around the world who cannot march, you know, who cannot go down their streets and say, I am queer, you know. So it is very important for you all to remember that and to understand that what you're doing is with great privilege, because there are millions of you, of us, out there who can't have those privileges.
If the listeners have maybe like $5 or $10, where should they send it?
Log on to the ILGA website. It will give you, many countries and people and organizations who are doing great work in different countries around the world. And they do need your support.
Fantastic. How about you, Gilbert? First, let's just get a shameless plug. Where would you like people to go on the internet? Where can people learn more?
At gilbertbaker.com.
Gilbert Baker?
Yeah, I have galleries up there. You can see my arts and stuff.
Fantastic.
There.
Fantastic. I'm definitely going
to
go check
it out. Yeah, I think I have it's out to vote right now, is my gallery up. And you can click, I made a million different versions of the rainbow flag, and I made a little rainbow flag for every state and territory in the U.S. And you can click on the state flag of Alabama or the state flag of Michigan, and you can register to vote, and we've registered, I guess, about 80,000, so so that's really cool. And I definitely do want to put another plug in for ILGA, because it is the international sort of congress, and it's sort of the blossoming and emerging unit of power that we have. We have great conferences, and we're getting more and more credibility in the broader human rights movement. You know, if someday we'll finally have, you know, a place at the United Nations, and so I definitely, you know, I'm a huge supporter of ILGA, as Saran was mentioning. And aside from that, I think, empower yourself, you know, through your art, through your craft, through your thinking, your writing, your music, whatever. You know, somewhere deep in your soul, you've got something to say. Say it. Say it proud and say it loud.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so what if somebody's not creative? What if they've just got like $5 or $10 or a few hours a week to kill? Where do you think people... How can people volunteer? Like a soup kitchen? Should we be getting political?
Yes, you should be getting political. Absolutely. I think that that's the most important thing. Remember that everything that you have in Canada came from the courts. You actually still have not won it at the popular ballot box as we have it in the U.S.
Really?
It is absolutely critical in our lifetimes that we actually win a Democratic majority. And it's great that the courts are on our side because obviously that's right and fair and just. But we must do more. We have to educate our families, our neighbors, our communities. And we have to create a majority so that the power and the rights that we have today will endure for generations. So absolutely, if you're not voting, I'm taking away your gay card and you're never getting laid. So if you're not voting, shame on you. And, you know, your $5 or $10, you know, send it to a local gay candidate. You know, there are plenty of gay people and queer people out there that have risen up. And really, that is my message for every gay person on Gay Pride is rise up, you know,
Lobby your government to pressurize these countries that still decriminalize homosexuality.
And we will win. You know, we're never going back.
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth. Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
No, I'm addressing the listeners out in La La Land. Okay, hey, what's up? You're on CITR 101.9 FM, and we're talking about Pemberton, where we just had the pleasure of going for free. I'm here with Victoria Cruz.
Oh, hey.
Who was my date for the weekend. Yeah, I basically put up with her because she had a huge tent, and that was awesome. And that's not any kind of innuendo, anyways.
No,
okay,
I had a big
Pemberton Music Festival.
Yes.
Kind of a mixed bag. There was fun stuff. There was stupid stuff. But first year around.
Everything that was expected. I did not expect it to be smooth. And I actually had a way better time than I thought I would have.
I did expect more things to go wrong
than actually did happen.
Day one, there were some pretty major problems right off the get-go.
Basically what happened was that campers were informed that they couldn't get up to the campsite post 9:30 at night on Thursday, that the gates were being closed. But of course, due to lineups and logistical errors and whatnot, and like shuttles being slow and just massive 20,000 people, let's say 10, 15,000 people coming up on a Friday night, on a Thursday night to camp,
right,
you're not going to be able to search through everybody's stuff and get everybody in before 9:30.
So people were waiting in line for hours.
And at 3 a.m. in the morning, the Shane Bourbonnais, hopefully I'm saying that right, the guy who basically ran the festival and brought the idea to Pemberton, was physically helping people get on the bus himself, right? It was just chaotic there. And, I mean, there was no massive riots or whatnot, but people were climbing the fences, just sick and tired of waiting in line. People were drinking alcohol in the on the road too and whatnot, because there's nothing else to do. They had nowhere to go.
And I guess, well, one of the main problems is, I've been hearing this from a lot of sources, around half their security
just walked off.
They just said, you know what, I'm not. And security, let's face it, security was sort of the big problem here. Genesis, the people who were running security, were not equipped to do this.
Yeah, very understaffed.
And they should have known it before they took the contract, honestly. Or maybe they should have just gotten two companies to do it. But Genesis was ridiculously understaffed. Yeah. And they'd been taking out ads in the Georgia Strait on Craigslist for months. So that was problematic. But the people were really well behaved.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was very well behaved. You know, I think in the back of everybody's minds is that they knew that this was the first time festival. And they just, I mean, just in general, I think people in British Columbia, especially the demographic, not younger people, but the younger generations are happy that they finally have this, you know, a festival that puts BC on the map. Oh. So people are very well behaved. And I think people just want to see this festival grow into something bigger and better, because it does have tons of potential. It does. It just logistically, they need to work out how they're going to funnel 40,000 people through Highway 99 to Pemberton, because the way it worked out right now, the waits were way too long.
Yeah, the waits were problematic. Okay, well, let's move on to the bands. Okay, so I wasn't there the first day. You saw a bunch of bands first day, which included Chromeo, Nine Inch Nails, Wolf Mother, Junkie XL, and Tommy Sunshine. And, of course, Junkie XL and Tommy Sunshine are electronic artists,
bands. Basically, the first... Well, I also did see a little bit of Metric as well.
Right.
I've seen them about five times now, and they always put on just a solid show, and it's just surprises me how more and more people do know their music now. Mm-hmm. They have built up over the last 4 years. Caught a little bit of Wolf Mother as well. It's just not really my cup of tea, but I think the crowd was really enjoying Wolf Mother.
I wasn't super excited about seeing Wolf Mother. It just seems like every two to three years, a band comes out of Australia, and they're like, all right, we're going to do hard rock about drinking and dancing and partying.
There's so much hype about them, though, like in the last year and a bit, eh?
Okay, well, come on, like, them, and then before that, it was, like, Jet, and it's like, you know, but, we're going to do songs about girls and heavy drinking, and it's going to be hard rock guitars, just like AC/DC.
Yeah, basically all I can say was that there was a huge flow of, you know, bare-chested frat boys from the beer gardens. bare-chested frat boys headed from the beer garden to see Wolf Mother, and that never ended after, because the Nine Inch Nails was after Wolf Mother as well. And Trent Reznor put on a show. It was a great light show. He knows how to perform. He's been a stable act since what, 1988 or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, keep on trunking, Trent. You were amazing, and it was phenomenal. Just in the setting of like all these purple light show, you see his face huge in the, you know, widescreen and behind the mountains. It was a really beautiful setting as well in Pemberton. We were in between this valley of mountains, and it was gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
and
definitely.
Friday night with the purple light show and Trent just, you know, screaming on top of his lungs. It was great. It was beautiful. Was that after that? Chromeo.
When was Chromeo before or after Nine Inch
Nails? Jeez, I forget.
I don't know. Who knows?
It was a blur. But yeah, Chromeo was in the Cardi B live tent, which served us very well because we got free alcohol.
Yeah. Shout out to Bacardi.
What's up? Yeah, so basically they served mojitos. You're in the middle of this desert
just
drinking free mojitos. It was hilarious. But yeah, it was great. Chromeo, amazing. They were great. And, you know, they deserve all the credit they're getting.
Well, one problem, though, they had Interpol play opposite.
Yeah, so
Chromeo.
That blew, because I really would have loved to see Interpol play. But, I mean, I went to see Chromeo. And I never questioned that choice because I was in the photo pit for it, too. So it was great. They are just so cute on stage. They just put on such an act. Everybody was such enjoying it again. When Fancy Footwork came on, the roof blew off the tent. Yeah, they're just really charismatic guys. Dave, I believe that's his name. He's just thoroughly enjoying himself the entire time he's playing. Like, they have these, like, funny smirks on their face the entire time, and they're just loving it.
Yeah.
Like, they're growing, and they're only going to get bigger.
Yeah, oh, and a big fuck you to the guy from the Georgia Strait who called them extricable.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely.
And he liked Low versus Diamond. Okay, yeah, so day one, pretty good. Let's move on. Day two, Sam Roberts Band especially, it sounded like a bootleg YouTube video, I thought. It had some serious tentacle
difficulties. Not going to lie, I was pretty drunk for the Sam Roberts Band. Sam Roberts is a really good-looking guy.
I don't know. I just, like, honestly, not my cup of tea. I think he's really pretty.
But, no, they're your standard Canadian rock band. I mean, they're nothing. They're predictable. They're nothing new. But they serve, you know, just Canadian rock and with a good-looking face. They all look exactly the same.
It's like Molson Canadian, you know, like other people might want to drink it. I think it's dull, predictable.
Yeah, it's predictable, and it's something that you would just, Sam Roberts. Yeah, I hear they're good. They're a solid Canadian band. Mm-hmm. Like, they're nothing new. I mean, they're not innovative, but they know how to play their instruments real well, and they're cute guys. So together they make a great band with some catchy songs.
Well, for me, like, I think, like, if you have a band that can be summed up as they know how to play in their instruments well and they're cute guys, that's just a...
yeah, exactly. But that's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, you
not
know,
your
enjoyable,
yeah.
But, like, probably a lot of people are going to be kind of like, Let's move on to something that really blew me away. Flaming Lips.
How about My Morning Jacket? Did you see them?
I was a little bit shooby-doo for that. I did catch a bit of their set.
Well, you were shooby... Well, My Morning Jacket, let me say, they are amazing live.
Yeah.
One band, I have to say, you have to see live. They are just all very, very, very... Just very... What's the word? I guess I could say electrifying. So Flaming Lips.
Yes. Yeah, let's get to Flaming Lips. This is what I really want to talk about because I had such a good time for Flaming Lips.
So why do you have a good time, Max?
Because they really figure out, you know, how to get the audience really involved. Yeah. You know, Wayne, the singer, has that fantastic trick where he gets into the giant plastic hamster ball and goes crawling out into the audience. That was so amazing. They start the show by bringing out 30 Teletubbies. They had the confetti cans.
Were the Teletubbies people chosen from the crowd?
No, I think they were their fan club. Okay. So I think they like notify them ahead of time online.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think like the Tragically Hip had gone on before them, and they were just sort of, you know, I'm playing
rock and roll. Once again, you're a Canadian band.
We're dudes. We're drinking
Bob
beer.
Cajun.
And then all of a sudden, you know, these people come on, and they're, you know, they've got these sort of construction outfits on, and they've got this giant gong, and you sort of know, oh, this is going to be really either really good, really sort of bad weird or good weird, but it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
But they killed it. You know, they played the hits. They had a fantastic sing-along for Yoshimi, Battles the Pink Robots. And they actually did concentrate a lot on that album.
Yeah, they
did. Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, which I think is probably good because frankly, it's a lot better than their newer
it's
stuff.
It's also just a freaking amazing album, and I just...
Yeah, it's fantastic. Weird pop songs. Yeah. They brought out the weather balloons. They must have had like 40 or 50 of those, and everybody in the audience was just batting the weather balloons around, and I was screaming like a maniac. It was amazing.
Like a maniac?
Yes. I had had a couple of drinks, but...
When did we have a couple of drinks?
Well, it was just so much fun to be, you know, singing the songs and batting the weather balloons and trying to grab the confetti. And Wayne is extremely charismatic.
He's also beautiful as well. Sorry, I just...
That was fantastic. Tom Petty, again... workmanlike rock and roll performance, not particularly interesting.
But it's Tom Petty.
It's Tom Petty, yeah. You know, it's kind of an experience. Yeah, you can be like, oh, I saw Tom Petty.
I definitely had a smile paste on my face for Free Falling. I mean,
you know, classic. But like after the Flaming Lips, I pretty much headed over to the Bacardi B Live.
And who'd you see?
I saw Mastercraft that night.
Mastercraft.
Everybody else, I didn't really care that much about. It was a lot of sort of, you know, I have a slightly uncool roommate a couple years ago who listened to that. It was sort of like electronica.
Yeah.
Deadmau5 was awesome. I forget if... I think Deadmau5 was Saturday, yeah. Mastercraft, not a fantastic set, but I was very excited for it.
I was very excited for it. I had a good time. I mean...
They just basically played their songs off a laptop and some CD players, and then they...
CDJs and... What did it say on Wikipedia? CDJs and their MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
But, Mastercraft, I was reading this article, and they definitely need to... They were saying how they need to get off the laptop.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that'd be fun at, like, a small club, but, like, you know, they basically did not interact very much.
I mean,
with
it's not
audience.
Really impressive when you see two guys peering over one computer, drink beer bottle in one hand, cigarette in the other, just raise their hands every climax of the song. I mean, yeah, like you said, Mac, like you can do that yourself, and you have done that yourself, right? So I mean, they need to think of something
like
new.
Justice is sort of renowned for having a very basic live show.
Yeah, but Justice,
they basically play their album, but Justice has the flashing cross and like all the
friggin'
Marshall
speakers. 10,000
speakers
on the side behind those that huge desk of theirs or whatever.
Mastercraft look extremely
it just
bored.
Looked like they were just smoking and getting wasted behind a computer screen.
So Bacardi B Live, I did spend most of my evening after Flaming Lips in the B Live tent. Those guys really seem to have their shit together a little bit more than the rest of the festival organizers.
It's also a bit smaller though too. But
it was a big tent.
Shit together though, Max, that's because we had our media passes and we can get in ASAP. People were waiting in line for like 2.5 hours, never got in.
But once you did get in though, it was very, very the lineup was extremely cohesive.
Yeah.
There was something to do pretty much constantly. The tent was really more like a club almost because they did have sort of these areas and they were, you know, selling the drinks and then sort of these raised platforms where you could sit on leather couches, you know, with the potted plants and it was air conditioned. So yeah, basically, Bacardi people, fan-fucking-tastic job. they also had some pretty cool vehicles that people had
made. One named Daisy and the Spider. The spider was basically this, like, it looked like a spider with a guy sitting in the middle just walking through the valley, walking through Pemberton.
Basically, acts you would want to see started going on around 3 p.m.
Yeah.
So Sunday, they sort of had some of the big name acts.
Yeah, Sunday was a big day.
A big day, not just in terms of alcoholism, no. Victoria.
On the main stage, they had Vampire Weekend, followed by NERD, followed by Death Cab,
followed by Jay-Z, followed by Coldplay.
Hello. But yeah. So basically, I was at the main stage for most of the day. But they also had Wintersleep on the other stage as well.
They had Wintersleep. They had Matis Yahoo.
Yeah.
And they had Fiery Furnaces, which a lot of CITR listeners probably would have really wanted to go see.
I wish I checked out.
You know what sucked though? This stupid band from Los Angeles, the Airborne Toxic Event.
the only band that came in unison to the media tent to get interviewed.
Yeah, they suck. If you're listening to this and you're from the Airborne Toxic Event, you should quit your day job. You suck.
Don't say
that. You suck. You know why you suck? Because it's your fault that Fiery Furnaces didn't get to play Tropical Iceland.
Yeah.
No, they didn't get to play Tropical Iceland.
Which was...
And I was so angry. And those people in the Airborne Toxic Event... had these matching black outfits, and they looked really stupid. You know, it was hot, it was dusty. Everybody
were they,
else,
L.A. hipsters?
There were sort of a bunch of L.A. hipsters.
They're from L.A., right?
Yeah, they're from L.A. Yeah. They're probably going to get snapped up by a major label. They're a very MySpace kind of band. So this kind of crappy flavor of the week MySpace band, which has a lot of buzz about them right now, although they are, I think, unsigned, and they haven't even put out an album. Yeah, it's MySpace buzz. Thanks to that, we didn't get to hear Tropical Iceland. Although the rest of the Fiery Furnaces set was fantastic. It was an absolute pleasure to see. I thought it was fantastic that they got the Pemberton people were clever enough to have them flown out.
Yeah.
So, you know, big props for flying out the Fiery Furnaces to the Pemberton people.
Because they're a fantastic band and everybody
big
should
Big fuck you to the Airborne Toxic Event for your outfits and for making me unable to hear Tropical Iceland. Yeah, that's just stupid. They just suck. You suck.
Really?
Matis Yahoo was cool. People got really into Matis Yahoo. Even people who weren't... Okay,
how
Matis
could
you Yahoo
not?
Is a Hasidic Jewish reggae rapper.
Yeah.
It sounds a little silly. He looks silly on stage because, you know, he's got the beard and the tassels. But he is incredibly, incredibly talented. He's amazing.
Yeah.
And his band was incredibly tight. Very, very, very spot on. It was fantastic. It was a really fantastic performance, and people were pretty much blown away, I think. I saw a lot of people who I don't think had ever seen him before just kind of like, huh? And then sort of like, whoa. So there was a big crowd, and that was on the smaller Lillooet stage.
Who was playing during Matis Yahoo on the main stage?
I don't know.
Was he...
I think he might have been opposite Vampire Weekend.
Okay.
Either Vampire Weekend or NERD, because it was early in the day. Vampire Weekend on the main stage, that was okay. I didn't think they were fantastic.
I was impressed with them because I saw them in Coachella and they blew.
Really?
In Coachella. Because, albeit they had this huge open-air stage so that seconded the main stage in Coachella, which is just a massive thing. But they did a way better performance in Pemberton. I think the screens helped. They didn't have any screens or any like big Teletron things in Coachella, so nobody could really see who they are, what they were doing. But here, they were cute. They looked like they were out of the 90s, wearing, you know, the matching jean jacket, jeans outfits. And there's like these cute little boys from wherever they're from and playing these like catchy little tunes.
I guess so, yeah.
So, yeah, whatever.
Like, I don't have anything against them.
No,
it's
no,
just
it's
like
fine.
I don't think they're that great.
I enjoyed.
I think
the
they're
set.
A little overhyped, but their set was okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed the set.
NERD, on the other hand, I'm sorry, Pharrell is a fantastic producer, but NERD fucking sucks. It's rap rock. Rap rock should have died in the 90s. Pharrell can't sing.
I'm not particularly a fan of their last album either. Well, the newest and last latest album.
No, it sucked. Their new songs
suck. It sounds like a bunch
their
of
old
noise.
Their old songs are mediocre, and their new ones suck. Yeah. There was just this really sort of creepy, awkward interaction with the fans when he would lift up his shirt and show the girls his abs, and he got them on the stage, and he sort of got them to dance sexy. But, you know, it was just, like, really painful. I just felt bad for some of these girls who were, you know.
Yeah. Sexy.
It was just really stupid.
Farrell, for some reason, there's, like, he's, like, he's a 15-year-old body of a boy with an 8-pack abs, and women go nuts over it.
I guess so. Just, like, really, really kind of stupid women. It was just pathetic. It was like there were a bunch of, you know, college girls.
Not even college girls. The girls on stage were not college girls.
They looked like college girls who were trying to dance. They were trying to dance like Paris Hilton, basically. But they weren't very good dancers. And it just came off very awkward, you know? Yeah. So I was super unimpressed. So maybe that's why I liked Death Cab's set so much.
And... yeah, you really enjoyed Death Cab, huh?
I did. I was actually surprised, because Death Cab haven't always been a fantastic live band. And sometimes I think they're a little bit too twee and sort of dreamy pop.
See, that's the thing. I did enjoy Death Cab's set, just because I'm also such a fan of them. I love them. But
they actually rocked pretty hard.
Yeah, they did rock pretty hard. It was just too bad for them, because they are put in between NERD and Jay-Z, right? So... I think that it would have been better for the organizers if they put them before NERD, because all the
after Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, just because the entire crowd was pretty pumped after NERD, you know, with all the girls on stage and blah,
well,
blah, blah.
The crowd was sort of like all the douchebags got really pumped.
But the
douchebags sort of came over after Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, but still, I think it just would have
and
been
then
better.
Pharrell, what was that stupid rhyme? It was like, I wanna fuck tonight. I want a party. I want to fuck tonight because I'm feeling horny.
Yeah.
It was, it was just really awkward. Like, he was trying to be sexy, but, and it just came off as really awkward and forced. Extremely forced. Yeah. But Death Cab, yeah. Death Cab actually had a much heavier sound than on record.
Yeah, they definitely rocked out, actually. But, yeah, they definitely rocked out.
Everything was, like, note perfect, whereas, Pharrell was kind of struggling to hit some of the notes when he actually had to sing.
Mind you, also, NERD was late by, I don't know, about an hour.
Jay-Z was, you know, I heard people say they were blown away. I wasn't particularly blown away, but...
Was that me?
That was you. You were blown away by Jay-Z. I thought it was good. I just thought it was sort of, you know, sort of turned in. It was like, okay, I'm going to play the hits. I'm going to play, like, the medley of the... more recent pop songs I've done a guest rap on.
Memphis Bleek in the house.
Exactly.
He is a special guest, Memphis Bleek. I was hoping for, like, Beyonce or something. That'd be hilarious.
They just didn't blow me away. They didn't do anything particularly
I guess for me, also, JC's very reminiscent of my old days when I was a big hip-hop head and just try to listen to the stuff my brother listened to.
I just don't think Jay-Z is that relevant. Like, if they could have gotten Kanye West instead, I think it would have been a lot better. Anyways, Coldplay, a lot of people were impressed. They put together a pretty solid set. What do you think?
You know what? As much as I don't want to be like, ugh, Coldplay. But, you know, they put together a solid set. Chris Martin was a lot more vivacious than I thought he would be. Mm-hmm. He acknowledged the fact that probably about 75-80% of the crowd thought that Jay-Z should have closed the show. And he... pretty much said, he's like, I'm not gonna say, like, it's kind of weird having Jay-Z opening for Coldplay because it's Jay-Z, so I'm just gonna say that Coldplay is closing for Jay-Z, kind of thing. So their set, what did I think about them?
Yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a solid set. I'm not particularly a huge fan of Coldplay. I mean, I do know all the words to the friggin' songs because, like, they pretty much mark a lot of my high school, like, dances or whatever. Yeah, they put on a fine set. They got their drummer to sing one song. It was kind of cute. And they ran to the back of the audience. They had a little stage set up there. So people who couldn't really particularly see Chris Martin's face, because they're all the way in the back and behind that big Teletron, they could come and see him. So that was kind of a cute thing for them to do. And so as much as I think Chris Martin can be a ween at times, they did put on a good show.
Yeah.
And they had cool effects and stuff too.
They did. Yeah. You know, it was there wasn't a huge problem. The sound was good. It's just like Coldplay, honestly. They're just not doing anything new. They're extremely safe. They're a band for people who are too lazy to have any sort of real taste in music. Yeah, they take out the indie rock from Arcade Fire and just leave the strings. They take out any sort of deep message from U2 and just sort of leave the vague altruistic posturing.
Yeah.
And they take out, they basically take out any of the introspective lyrics from Radiohead and they basically just sort of leave the dreaminess. But hey, you know, it's catchy. Anyways, so let's wrap up, I guess. You know, overall, what did you think?
Overall, on a scale from 1 to 10, I would actually rate Pemberton a 8 out of 10. How do I scale these? Well, you know, you can email me at promotions@citr.ca. You know, ask me how I rate my, what, 12.6?
I don't know. No. I don't go to a lot of festivals. And maybe, you know, the huge lines, the $7 beer, and it was $7, by the way, and all the dust, you know, maybe that's the reason I don't go to a lot of festivals.
But they're not all like that, though.
No. No. Are you kidding? It's $7 beer everywhere.
No. There's $7 beer everywhere, but there's not all that dust.
Yeah.
At lineups.
Well, you know, there's environmental stuff. You know, you're going to be outside.
Anyways, though.
So, you know, that's a festival isn't, like, the ideal place for me to see a band. But I do have to say, you know, those mountains were beautiful. So that was... But what did I think of the festival? It sort of was being dragged in two directions. Sort of towards a very mainstream, chachi kind of group. In which case, if they keep doing that, they're basically going to be assured that they'll make money.
Which is what they're going for.
But, then again, there's also sort of more interesting underground, very of-the-moment acts like Fiery Furnaces, My Morning Jacket, even Flaming Lips and Mastercraft. And if they go in that direction, then I think BC is finally going to have an annual music festival that people are going to be coming to.
But they need to do it. They need to keep on bringing in those big mainstream acts, but they need to keep on having their ear to the ground kind of thing and having those up-and-comings.
Well, I guess it's kind of hard, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they do have Nickelback, they can be guaranteed that nobody is going... Like, none of the East Van hipsters are going to pay $300 for tickets to go see Nickelback.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so I guess it's really... You know, it is their first time. They're sort of figuring out what direction they're going. But, you know, hopefully they do take a more experimental one. And they do try and keep it a little bit more relevant, I guess.
Mm.
Anyways, I did have a fantastic time, though.
So did I. And it was fun being with you, too.
Oh, it was fun being with you. You know who it was really fun being with? The Bacardi people, because they gave me free liquor.
Shout out to the Bacardi people.
Shout out to the Bacardi people.
And also Marty Wilson and People of the Arts Biz, thank you so much for all your efforts and time getting us up there, because we really appreciate you giving the ability for us
to do this. Totally going to edit that out.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Okay.